Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. When Jocelyn Linder was in her 20s, her legs suddenly started to swell. After years of misdiagnosis, doctors discovered a deadly blockage in her liver. Struggling to find an explanation for her unusual condition, Jocelyn compared the medical chart of her father, who had died from a mysterious disease 10 years prior, with that of an uncle, who had died under similarly strange circumstances. Delving further and further and further into the past, she discovered that her great-grandmother had displayed symptoms similar to hers before her death. Clearly, this was more than a fluke. Setting out to build a more complete picture of the illness that haunted her family, Jocelyn approached Dr. Christine Seidman, the head of a group of world-class genetic researchers at Harvard Medical School, for help. Dr. Seidman had been working on her family's case for 20 years and had finally confirmed that 14 of Jocelyn's relatives carried something called a private mutation, meaning that they were the first known people to experience the baffling symptoms of a brand new genetic mutation. In her new book, The Family Gene, Jocelyn tells the story of their gene, the lives it claimed, and the future of genomic medicine with the potential to save those that remain. It is a great pleasure to welcome Jocelyn Linder to this week's book show.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. So, hey, congratulations, you won this lottery, right? So this is out of the blue, I guess, when you find all of this and you think of it from an odds perspective.
Sure. I think that, yes, we're a 1 in a billion mutation is what they tell us.
That is extraordinary. So yeah. Even because originally you think of it as a fluke. So when someone actually starts to put the pieces together, how does that start to make you feel? I mean, you wrote a whole book about it, but as you come to understand what it is.
I mean, I think the best way that I've come to understand it is that, you know, 52,000 years ago, they say there was this mutation in Europe that caused a monogenetic disease called cystic fibrosis, which is a very commonly known mutation. And it's also it's the oldest one that we know about. And over the course of the next, 3,600 plus generations, that gene has spread to hundreds of thousands of people around the world. So our gene, we sort of know, started 120 years ago, six generations ago, and it's only spread into the five generations at this point. So yeah, it's a pretty alarming thing to realize that you're sort of at the beginning of what could be this giant scourge on humanity, really.
When you noticed your symptoms, as I mentioned in the introduction, you were in your 20s. When did you start to seek treatment? As I mentioned also, that it was misdiagnosis after misdiagnosis. So did that help waylay some of the discomfort you were having and some of the problems? In other words, treating the symptoms?
Part of the problem is there weren't any treatments. And I had already seen my father, in my 20s, go through this horrible death, this sort of 3-year-long death where we didn't know anything about what was happening. And really, historically, with genetic disease, there haven't been very many cures. Occasionally, doctors are able to sort of trick the body into thinking it's doing the bad thing without it actually doing the bad thing. But in our case, they didn't know enough about the sort of molecular level, what was happening in our bodies. They just knew how this thing was appearing in our bodies. So as far as treatments went, for me, I could wear stockings to sort of deal with my swelling. And then as far as treating the blockage in the portal vein, it was really about being careful about over-exercising, not wanting to put too much pressure on those delicate pathways in my body to avoid bleeds, maybe taking a beta blocker or something to lower the blood pressure. But there really wasn't very many great ways to treat what was going on.
Given the tragic death of your father, when did you start to question the similarities?
I knew, well, the thing was, we had this team at Harvard, the Seidman Lab, come onto our case while my father was still living. And they figured out within a couple of years that the gene was on something called the X chromosome, which, you know, the very quick genetic lesson is men pass daughters an X chromosome and sons a Y. And since we'd inherited, my sister and I had inherited an X from our father, we both were told we had the gene, and this was in our 20s. But again, because of the X chromosome link, they see women sort of experiencing symptoms at a much slower pace and much differently. So I kind of had this sense that I wasn't going to get sick exactly like my father. It would sort of be something slower. You know, hopefully I'd have a lot more time. Hopefully my symptoms would be a lot less severe. In men, it does seem to come on. My uncle passed away a few years after my father, and his illness was just as sort of quick and horrible, where they both filled with a fluid called chyle, which is made up of lymph and emulsified fats. And basically, if you're leaking proteins and fats, you're not digesting. So the two of them slowly starved to death. And it was lucky because it didn't seem like I was going to get those exact symptoms. But my symptoms did turn out to be quite alarming when they found the blockage in the portal vein.
And that's what is so fascinating, is because it's difficult to make a direct line and a direct assumption as, okay, this is the same thing, when it affects people differently.
Right. And I think that's very much in the beginning why nobody really put it all together. I had an uncle who died at the age of 34 in 1961 of identical symptoms to my father. And the only person that really saw it was my great aunt, his wife, who had, you know, obviously been front row for that horrible death in the 60s. And my uncle had been at the National Institutes of Health in the earliest days, and really doctors had no idea what was going on with him. So when she came to us with his medical charts, that's when we began to realize, okay, this thing definitely has been seen before.
When you talk about the Harvard team coming on to your father's case, at what point, I don't know how to say this gently, but I mean, they have to be, they're looking, but they also have to be fascinated by it too, right? I mean, this is a first for them.
Yeah, I had this funny experience where I went to the lab, and I was probably 26 years old, and I remember kind of feeling like a rock star. Like, everybody was just looking at me like they just knew me and they wanted my autograph or something.
Yeah.
So there is, yeah, there's definitely, but you want that. I think when you have anyone with a rare disease is going to say, like, you need the attention, you need the resources. So the more interesting people find you, the luckier in a lot of ways you are.
Because they are interested and they want to find out more, and it's test after test, study after study, and they know that you're sort of the key to finding out what the deal is.
Right. And what we have since learned is that our gene is on the same gene as the asthma gene, or as a gene that's very, very commonly causes asthma. So we're not, you know, just studying us, looking for a cure for us, actually will impact people with asthma, certain allergies. So it actually has a broader impact that is really important to a lot of people.
Jocelyn Linder is our guest. The name of the new book is The Family Gene. It is just out in paperback from Echo. So as it stands right now, what is the status of your disease?
So right now, There are six people that are living with the gene. Everyone else has since passed either of old age or of the gene itself.
And they're all in your family.
They're all in my family. So and basically at this point, you know, the people in my generation are in our 40s. And that's sort of when you start to see symptoms get worse. However, there are some people that are older than us that are doing very well and have had very few problems. And, you know, so it's really just everyone's in a different place. But the lab at this point is on the cusp of publishing, which is a big deal. They haven't yet published our information. And so that's exciting. And then also, they've really come up with some great ideas as far as treatment goes, including using Singulair, which is a really commonly known asthma pill. So
right.
They're hoping that could help stem some of the problems that we'll see down the road.
Well, wouldn't that be something to have this very rare disease cured by a fairly common medication?
I know. I mean, could you, like, if there's a pill, I feel like that would be amazing. That's what you want.
Give a sense of, you're a writer.
Yes.
And that's what you set out in this world to do. And suddenly, here we are talking about genetic mutation. I mean, you didn't sign up for this. So at the point that you wanted to write the book, and you're writing about not only yourself, but you're writing about very complex science and medicine, what is that like?
I mean, that actually was a really strange, for me, I was never a memoirist. I was much more of a, I like to write nonfiction and I like to write fiction, but I was not into memoir at all. And so for me, I had a friend say, you should really write about what happened to your dad, but that didn't resonate until I realized how much is going on in the world of genetics right now and how much so many of us don't know. And I really feel like we're kind of at this precipice where people who are going to be making the decisions that we that are going to be, you know, moving forward about genes and genetics and gene therapies are either going to be a very small group of people or a very uninformed group. So I felt in writing this book that it gave me this opportunity to sort of explain to people like me who have no idea what all these things are. Like at one point I said to my editor that I wanted to name base pairs Brangelina and Beyonce because I thought, hey, then like I'll get, you know, it'll be fun and it'll be sort of jazzy. And she didn't let me, but I really feel like I made the science accessible to me, and that was my goal.
And once you have that science understandable for people and the average reader, if you will, it does come down to a level of anyone can relate to this story because we all begin. When I was reading the book, I look at it and say, oh, God, you know, you wonder what's in your family, right? I mean, that's the core level of it is, okay, you go through this, but these quote-unquote flukes can happen to anyone.
And it's fascinating because I think that we're at a place with these things like 23andMe or even just genome mapping where they're going to basically be handing people their babies and their genomes, where pretty soon they're saying there will be 3 points on everyone's DNA where you will know how you will likely die. You know, and I think it's kind of it's alarming to some people, but I think it's also a really fascinating way for us to kind of get in touch with, you know, our bodies and these illnesses and ways to treat them. I think the more people that are on board with trying to figure things out genetically, the better off we all are.
So for the, let's just explore that for a second. So for the average reader, for the average person, they go out and they get a 23andMe kit. You can find out your genealogy. That's one thing. But you can also find out health information. For the average person, what do you do with that information though? Once you find out that you have something that's weird or quirky or not the norm, then what do you do?
I really think it's obviously going to be person-to-person dependent. I think doing it through 23andMe is probably not the best idea. I think if you're going to do it, number one, if you do it through your doctor, you're protected in some ways under HIPAA laws. So there's a certain amount of protection. Right now, 23andMe and Ancestry and those groups are basically unregulated. So you're looking at a lot of, you know, the privacy issues that we can talk about another time. But at the end of the day, I think if you're going to do it, try to have somebody there that can talk you through what those results mean, because it's a little bit alarming, you know, to be told you have a 40% chance of developing Alzheimer's, you know, in your 30s, you're told that. And then you think to yourself all the time, like, well, what does that mean? What is 30%? What do these percentages mean? So I think at the end of the day, having said all of that, I also think for me, seeing this sort of monster and sizing it up and standing up to it for me has been incredibly affirming. It's been incredibly meaningful. And I feel so lucky that I have this chance to talk about rare disease and rare genetic disease, largely because I feel pretty good. I'm lucky that I feel good. And I think that there are mothers and fathers of children with horrible disease. And it's like so emotionally and psychologically draining. How do they move forward with that? There are people that feel terrible or have physical limitations because of genetic disease, and they can't really do anything. So I almost feel like it's my job, or in some way can help all of these people, but just by talking about this stuff. And I think for all of us to realize our genes are telling our bodies a lot of things, it's going to just help everybody. It's good for all of us.
Jocelyn Linder is the author of the new book, The Family Gene, A Mission to Turn My Deadly Inheritance into a Hopeful Future. So let us focus on that for a moment, which is how you make that turn of taking what you know about your genetic mutation and make that hopeful and change it not only for you, but for future generations in your family and for anyone who may be looking at some sort of mutation and how it affects them.
We're at such an exciting time with genes. I mean, we're really, and medical genetics in particular is basically brand new. I mean, even up until 10 years ago, that really wasn't even studied in medical school. So we're in this place now where genes are becoming so important in cancer treatments and health treatments, and individualized medicine is really coming in and looking at our genomes. So it's really this, I do think we're in such a hopeful time. I think any diagnosis or any potential diagnosis people get, we have a lot of hope. So, and there's a lot of exciting things happening.
Jocelyn Linder is our guest. The name of the new book is The Family Gene. It is published by Echo.
When you think of hope, I mean, anyone with a disease will think of hope of a cure, will think of hope of some relief from what they're dealing with. And sometimes that can be, as you say, right on the cusp, and sometimes there doesn't seem to be any real hope, immediate anyway, a long way off. And I guess when we think about that, and you're telling your story, how does that affect just your regular life of having children, of moving forward, of doing all of the things that we normally do as human beings?
Yeah, I mean, basically, when you have a genetic mistake, when you have a variant or mutation, you're talking about, and I mean like a monogenetic disease type of variant, you have this bad information in every single one of your 37 trillion cells. And I always think about it like it would be like taking an already built brick building and then replacing all the bricks. So I feel like, you know, we're kind of in that position. But one thing my family did do that I feel incredibly proud of is knowing about our disease, and that there were only like sort of six of us or four of us even in my generation. We could say to each other, okay, we can choose to not pass our gene to our children. That was something we were able to choose.
Right.
So my sister had her children using a procedure called in vitro fertilization with pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. So my niece and nephew were born healthy without our gene. And I have another cousin who had had her children before we really knew anything, and she just got lucky. Her kids didn't get the gene. So the sort of, and my husband and I made a choice not to have children. I think we just realized I had too many problems physically to actually carry a baby, and then we just made a choice not to move forward in any other way. And we like dogs, so that was okay.
Yeah, that's good.
And then, but one thing that I always think about that makes me so happy is there are 26 children in the sixth generation since our gene first mutated, and none of them has the family gene.
And you know that it will never become apparent, in the sense of if they don't have it now, they won't have it later.
Right. It isn't the kind of gene that mutates as you age. It's something that you're born with. So
okay.
You have to be born with it.
Yeah. So it's not going to develop.
Exactly.
As it were. So you do know. The idea, the first was your sister who had two children, and what was the, tell us about what happened there that allowed them to have the children without the mutation.
Well, when my father was sick, this was in 90, my father passed in 1996. This team at Harvard had already started studying our case, and they had taken my father's DNA and actually the DNA of everybody in our family, and they mapped it. And the way that they used to look at DNA was literally through a microscope, and they would color it, you know, different colors, and they would look protein by protein, or the amino acid after amino acid, at the DNA and figure out where the mistake was. And they found this mistake in my father. And then over the years, they became more and more certain as the technology got better and better. And they told us actually in our 20s, you know, we were sort of assured we were going to be okay, largely because we're girls. And the doctor at the time thought we wouldn't develop any symptoms, certainly not like our father. At least that's the hope. But she did say to us, come to me when you want to have children. And that was really exciting that we were able to go to her and she was able to give us the exact location of our gene, at least as far as they believe it to be. And they're probably right. And Hillary was able to have children that way.
When you consider the idea of writing the story, and it's you, but it's the whole family, what goes into that in the discussions of, hey, everybody, I want to tell this story of what's going on with us?
That's a great question. I had had an experience where the story was first told on NBC.com. They published an article about our gene.
Right.
And I I was immediately like taken aback because I had no control over the telling of my story, and I didn't love it. I did not love the experience. So when I decided I was going to tell it myself, I immediately went to the family and then kept them updated at every pass. And I took their notes when they gave me notes. If there was a note I didn't love that I wanted to keep something in the book that they didn't really want there, I tried to talk them carefully into it. But basically, I wanted, you know, in my opinion, the gene was the bad guy, and I didn't want to, you know, cause any problems in the family. And I understood that I'm taking their stories or the stories of their parents or the stories of their cousins or siblings, and I needed to sort of be respectful and mindful of that.
I don't want to get psychological, and by saying that, I'm going to get psychological, which is, you use the word twice in our conversation as what you have is a mistake. And I find that to be an interesting word. It's a mistake. I started off by talking about the lottery. There is a sense there that do you see yourself or what you have is that there's something wrong?
I mean, yes, because yeah. There actually is something wrong.
Right.
Psychologically speaking, I think that there's an element of frustration, how we started talking with the conversation about luck. It does feel incredibly unlucky that this happened. Certainly, I always used to talk about when I was growing up, my dad really liked to get everybody onto the porch to watch storms come in. We lived in Columbus, Ohio, which had big skies, and we'd watch storms come in. And this one day we're sitting there and the neighbors across the street, their house got struck by lightning. And the lightning, like you could feel the electricity on your face and on the hairs on your arms. And I, like, as soon as I started thinking about our story, I was like, that was who we were. Like, we were the people that watched lightning strike other people's houses. And so when my father got sick, you know, in sort of in my late teens, it was so shocking to us because we weren't those people that sort of that happened to. And it was really, you know, it definitely changed, I think, the course of my life and, you know, who I became, I think, certainly shifted quite a bit in those years.
So as a writer, then, what do you find your course to be? You have the book out. It's in paperback. You've obviously been through the circuit talking about this. So what's next? How do you write mostly about this subject, about science, about genes, about the future and what is possible with the science that is coming out?
I've been lucky because the book, I think the book accomplished what I hoped it would, which was being able to tell the story of the science in a way that was accessible. So that has opened up a lot of doors in science writing for me that I never expected. And I'm really enjoying it. So that's one area where I've sort of spent a lot of time. But I'm still, you know, I'm still working on fiction. And the book was optioned for television. So there's like this hope that in my mind there will be a TV show about genetics where we're sort of solving rare genetic disease or, you know, either in real life or a fictionalized version. That would be awesome.
In real life or in a 43-minute episode.
Total, I'll take either.
But it's important to talk about it, isn't it? I mean, important for people to understand that this can go on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely think we are at a place. There's a snowball going down a mountain right now, and it is the field of genetics. And it is definitely things like gene therapies, which people don't even really realize how good we are at them and how cheap they are right now. And that's today, right? And they're getting cheaper and we're getting better. And these are things I think a lot of us should have at least a baseline understanding. So when the big questions come up, when the ethical questions come up, when the scientific questions come up, we are equipped to answer them or at least basically understand what's going on.
The name of the book is The Family Gene, A Mission to Turn My Deadly Inheritance into a Hopeful Future. The book is out in paperback. It is published by Echo. Jocelyn Linder, thank you so much for spending time with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much. This was great.
Once again, Jocelyn Linder's new book is The Family Gene. It is published by Echo. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.